This is KAZU, Pacific Grove, Monterey Bay Public Radio. My name is Mae Brussel. The title of this broadcast is World Watchers. Before I begin the program, I want to say that this hour, World Watchers, is made possible in part by Aries Arts in the heart of Capitola Village, serving Santa Cruz's growing consciousness for over 20 years. The number of this program of World Watchers is number 845, February 15th, 1988. If you're not used to listening to Mae Brussel, I suggest that you do it continuously for 3, 4, 10 weeks and get used to the lingo. It goes pretty fast, and it gets faster as the hour is completing the first hour because I have so much material to share with you. Hang in there. You won't remember all the names. Some, like last week, are repeated purposely to hope that you remembered at least what I was saying. If not, the names get the gist of the idea of E.F. Hutton, Merrill Lynch, and Oral Salik and Bekir Salink. New names to you, some of them, some aren't, and at times I do repeat on purpose because these are difficult names to remember, and there were certain points I wanted to get fixed into your heads, hopefully, because we can build upon those, and I've talked about them in the past. A lot of people wonder if I ever have good news to share. Well, I have a suggestion, some names for rejoicing, at least a little bit. House Speaker Jim Wright has appointed two new members to the Select Committee on Intelligence, and according to the Washington Times, it's very nervous about this. They're both liberals. Can you imagine? One is Representative Bill Richardson from New Mexico, a Democrat, and the other is Representative Nicholas Mavroufalis, M-A-V-R-O-U-L-E-S, from Massachusetts, a Democrat, and this will be at a time when financial aid to oppose Jonas Savimbi in the Angola struggle may come to a vote. There are two new appointments to the House Intelligence, the Select Committee on Intelligence. So maybe just as the Contra aid was turned down, we may stop that bloody war in Angola and let the people decide themselves who they want to run Angola. Leo Ryan was the congressman that fought the Angolan funding of the rebels that were trying to overthrow Angola when they had their own process of who they wanted to be running the country, and it involved people that were later in named in Jonestown operation, and then the payment for Leo Ryan's fighting this operation and having the Use Ryan bill involved his own murder down in Jonestown later. Let's hope that the people that have this new intelligence committee have a better life expectancy, but it's dangerous to take these positions. There's an article in Los Angeles Times and San Francisco Chronicle this week, February the 11th, 1988, regarding the Presidio trial on the military base, the charges against Gary Hambright, a person that worked at the daycare center. He was charged with child abuse, and as the weeks and months go on, they keep whittling down this case that originally started with approximately 57 children, and several weeks ago, or last week, I mentioned they tossed out five of the original 12 counts, and this week they threw out everything except one count of child abuse. This was a Baptist minister who took care, he said he was a minister, took care of the children at the military base, and they're literally taking away the charges of this case. They're only leaving one case, one count, charging Hambright with oral copulation with an individual minor, even though a large percentage of those children had venereal disease. Have it now, I suppose. He worked as the child supervisor from June 85 to November 86, and most of the charges have been dropped, showing how hard the government wants to protect people that are doing child molestations on a military base and using, of course, the courts to protect the very people who've been named by the children, identified by the children, and there are a lot of reasons to believe that these things happened to them. So now he's down to one count, which means that he can't be penalized for very much if it was just one count. So we'll see what happens with that story. Last week, I was describing the death of a man, James Thurberge, 57 years old, who died in Montego Bay over in Jamaica, and that he was very close to George Bush. He was an advisor to George Bush on drug traffic. He was trained in Heidelberg, went with the CIA just about that time period, and was the ambassador, U.S. ambassador to Argentina, to Nicaragua, and to Chile, three favorite American dictatorships, while he was an advisor to drugs, to George Bush on drug traffic. Now, his death just took place January 25th, 1988, 3 weeks ago, and all of a sudden in the news, if you followed those very interesting hearings regarding Noriega in Panama and two primary witnesses, or three that I'll talk about in a moment, that testified, the name George Bush came up through those hearings quite frequently. A former aide to George Bush, Vice President Bush, said that Bush interfered with the plans to get rid of Noriega just this past January, and he proposed an alternative way to keep Noriega in office. You're hearing hundreds of millions of dollars went through the Panamanian banks, and millions to Noriega, and George Bush wanted to keep him in office, and he sent retired Admiral Daniel Murphy, who was Bush's chief of staff until 1985, who became a consultant, who works with Tongson Park, Reverend Mooney's right-hand man, and sent them down to Panama and told Noriega to cool his act and keep things a little quieter and try to stay in office, and they would take care of him later. Mr. Blandón quoted Noriega as saying that in November, last November, there was a meeting between Mr. Murphy, and he claimed he was the emissary of George Shultz, and our national security advisor, Lieutenant General Colin Powell, who was part of the NSC Ollie North Destruction of Evidence operation before he got promoted. And the State Department and the National Security Council briefed Murphy, and Murphy spoke with Vice President Bush's national security advisor, Donald Gregg, another fellow wrapped around the drug traffic in El Salvador and South America in general, and scandalous connections to the White House with Mr. Gomez-Rodriguez. And Donald Gregg knew about the meetings with Noriega, and Bush was trying to protect Noriega, keep him in office. And Murphy was accompanied to these meetings, as I say, by South Korean lobbyist Tongson Park, who was named in congressional scandals just a few years ago, bribing members of Congress. And according to the Los Angeles Times, February the 11th, Panama, this is what the deal was that Tongson Park and Mr. Murphy, Admiral Murphy, were making with George Bush, Vice President, as the man they were allegedly speaking, that he would suggest that Noriega tone down and he would help him in office. In addition to these conversations, Panama, this was part of the deal, would restore press freedom and civil rights and grant amnesty for political crimes. And according to Mr. Blandón, who testified against Noriega this past week, Admiral Murphy and Tongson Park also pledged to secure Japanese economic assistance for Panama. Japan would support Panama economically. Remember, or maybe you don't remember, the program's idea just about 6 months ago that Henry Kissinger was arranging for Japan to rebuild the Panama Canal. Remember, that was our enemy in World War II. We're financially dependent upon them now. They're bailing out our banks and putting up the money. And Tongson Park, who is so close to Reverend Moon, Moon's godfather is Ryosha Sasakawa, the Japanese war criminal who founded the Moon Church. Tongson Park and Admiral Murphy arranging for Japan to build up Panama, making deals with Noriega. There is a something very sinister in this combination of Korea and Japan telling Noriega to hang in there, representing Mr. Murphy, formerly being with George Bush, Admiral Murphy, and then going down to Panama and wanting to keep Noriega in. And if you listen to the stories of the people who testified this past week and all the drug traffic that was going on, and yet Mr. Gregg and George Bush and his emissaries were down there with Tongson Park. Now, the story of narcotics in Southeast Asia in Burma and in Colombia and so forth, and the Gold Triangle and the money going to Italy, the pizza connections are not new stories. They are old stories. I've watched them before. I had them on the air for many years. I just pulled out two articles to give an example of how long ago all of this was going on. Jack Anderson, 1973, September 13th, 1973, had a story, Opium Proposal. The colorful Shan Guerrillas, and those are the groups run by Khun San now, offered to sell the United States all their opium poppies. This is 1973, cut down 400 tons of high-grade Asian opium coming to the United States. We paid Turkey to stop their Turkish opium. 75% of the supply of heroin in the United States would have been cut off, except that the powers that be in Washington, again, said blow away. This was as early as 1973, and look how much opium and heroin has come into the United States since that time, and come in through people like Theodore Shackley, identified by Khun San, and Richard Armitage, are now Deputy Director of Defense Department under Frank Carlucci, who has taken over Fred Eakley's position. He's been promoted. And the Shan emissary, the group in Burma, wanted to stop the opium coming into this country as early as 1973. Now, that's important because last week I mentioned that the Golden Triangle opium, the opium coming in from Khun Sa, whose name is Chang Chin Chi Fu, was tied into the Mr. Musululu, Oral Salik, who was getting money through Mr. Waradal in Switzerland from E.F. Hutton and Merrill Lynch. So this Golden Triangle explosion of narcotics into the United States went into the hands of the CIA. It went into the banks in Switzerland, into the banks in New York City, and all over. The witnesses, particularly one, Mr. Rodriguez, talked, just named three or four banks that are involved in the drug traffic operations. So that years ago, this could have been tied up, but even today, the money has been flowing right into those accounts, into Switzerland, and into the man who then got Aja, Ali Mehmet Aja, out of the jail in Turkey and located him in various places until he was at St. Peter's and shot the Pope in May of 1981. So all of that could have been stopped, except it's been going on in the hands of the same people. And then I pulled out one of my articles, earlier articles, on is New York Times on the drug problem, the heroin traffic coming in to the United States, New York and New Jersey and so forth. The same people that were exposed by Judge Kaufman's Crime Commission in 1982, he started the work, and by 1984, and these are the same people connected to the money going to Switzerland from Merrill Lynch and E.F. Hutton and other banking houses. This article from New York Times is titled, Mob Said to Invade the Pizza Industry, and it details in 1980 what was happening. Don Reagan was chairman of E.F. Hutton for 12 years. And in 1979, I pointed out the explosive year that the houses of E.F. Hutton and Merrill Lynch were sending money to Paul Waradel and Oral Salik. And 1 year later, there were long articles about the heroin, pizza connections, and drug traffic. It already can be identified as going on 1 year. In 1980, that happened. Reagan was inaugurated in 1981, and one of the chairmen for 12 years of a banking firm identified with this was made Secretary of the Treasury, and as I said before, the Treasury was the branch of the government that would have been responsible for checking that out. So these are articles to indicate that a long time before these big stories broke on drugs, all of this could have been prevented, except that the people doing the drug traffic are high up in Washington and maintain their security by not only what they know, but the banks depend upon the deposits in order to hold together. Now, some of the most dramatic and interesting testimony that I've ever heard on television, televised hearings, or read about were the hearings before John Kerry's committee. He's chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Subcommittee on Terrorism and Narcotics. And there was testimony from Joseph Landon, a former associate of Panama leader Manuel Noriega, and Ramon Millan Rodriguez, the accountant with the Medellin cartel, describing the bank, the drug flowing into every single bank in Panama, how he worked with the CIA, how he worked with the Contras, and for all purposes, it was a million-dollar vindication of the lawsuit that the Christic Institute has. Next month, John Kerry's committee, the same committee, is going into the CIA Contra drug connections, and this is a good way for Daniel Sheehan's lawsuit to begin, because here are people testifying to the fact that they paid the Contras and the Anti-Castro Cubans, and he testified about putting money in the First Boston Bank, the Citicorp, the Bank of America. I'll do more on those banks in a few minutes. But the thing that was so scary about these hearings, and I taped them off the screen, off the TV, I listened to them, I put them on the cassettes, I listened to them twice, the full hearings. What was scary about it was that the only reason it seems that they're closing in on the drug connections at this time are because people like Noriega might have shared some of the drug profits with the leftists in El Salvador, with the M-19s in Colombia, with Fidel Castro. If the far right is doing the drug traffic, if the Nazis and the fascists do it, nothing happened when Klaus Barbie was doing it with the top people of Bolivia who were big fundraisers for the Republican Party. That was okay. Once Klaus Barbie and Mates and Gomez were out of Bolivia, then America sent troops to end the drug traffic in Bolivia. The bottom line is that the communists and leftists can't get their hands on the drug money. Mr. Rodriguez said that, but he also told about the very fascists in Colombia, those lovers of the Nazi parties like the Medellin cartel and the group that he was familiar with. He didn't call them Nazis, he called them the hardest killers. Hung people up on trees, cut out their stomachs. These are the stories of the quartered man, people chopped up and displayed for public purposes, so that the far right, the stone killers, he referred to them as the meanest, use terrorism to control the drug profits because they call that capitalism. He says, I've studied fascism and capitalism. Capitalism is cutting people up throat to throat, slitting their throats, and so forth, publicly displaying them as did the Ustashi in Yugoslavia during the war. And what I got out of this was a fear that the leftists may use the drug money like the right wing has done since World War II, when Lucky Luciano was allowed to leave prison and go to Italy and set up the drug networks after World War II. Now, John Kerry was praising CIA Director William Webster. Oh, he's so wonderful. He even fired a couple of CIA, and he said, I have the finest regard for him. Webster is a racist, singling out the blacks, as evidenced in a lot of material that's come out recently. He set up that dismal scam operation. His agent, Oliver Buck Revel, works with Ollie North on the covert action terrorism, agent provocateur monkey business, where a lot of people are sacrificed so they can talk their terrorism inside out. And John Kerry knows that William Webster stopped the investigation as head of the FBI director in Miami, stopped the Christic Institute, told the FBI not to go into the Miami connections of the drug after the Eden Pastora operation when he was almost killed, and the Christic suit filed their case in Miami. They laid off, and Webster has been very much a part of sending people back to the death squads in El Salvador, breaking into offices, taking the list of people's names, and their tape recordings. One witness who worked for him testified that he not only was breaking into these groups. Mr. Frank Varelli testified February 26, 1987, as an ex-FBI informant, what the FBI was doing. John Kerry praised him, and it's very dangerous. We have to watch, even as they open up the investigation, we have to watch what they're doing. And then what was scary was that Senator Kerry asked Mr. Rodriguez, do you ever regret, when you look at this, what you did, that you used that brain of yours that God gave you, obviously a good brain, this is what he asked him. And Rodriguez said, let me say this, Senator, there is some mitigation to my life. I didn't come here to bury Caesar, but to praise him. I think later on you will find that I am not entirely as bad as I seem, sort of the argument of Adolf Hitler fighting communism. And Kerry said, are you sorry for the path you chose? The years you're serving now, he's supposed to have 45 years in the clink. I bet he gets 4. He said, do you feel a sense of waste? And he answered, do you say that I lost something? That and it could have been different. He said, you know, Senator, I can only live with people who are willing to do moral, reprehensible acts for ends that are in the best interest of our ideology. Our ideology, think of that, and the ideology of the Medellin cartel that keep the pictures of Hitler and Mussolini and a statue of John Lennon with bullets in it. He said, we use the justifiable means to break the law, and in court, we pay. That's the way it is. We live, and we're willing to do moral, reprehensible acts for ends that are in the best interest of our ideology. We use the justifiable means to break the law, and if we go to court, we pay for it, but we're going to do that. And that is really scary. The two senators questioning him or listening to testimony, one was, say, John Kerry, and the other was New York Republican Alphonse D'Amato, responsible for covering up the Joseph Mengele, Klaus Barbie cocaine connections and agreeing a sellout that Mengele died in 1979 without any actual proof that that was Joseph Mengele that was dunked into the water and put into an unmarked grave in Sao Paulo, Brazil. Now, last week, I was talking, as I say, about Merrill Lynch and E.F. Hutton and their deposits into the Swiss account of Mr. Waradell that went to Bekir Salink. And I want to go one step further with people that shot the Pope that were involved in drug traffic and take it to France. I haven't done the French part, and that hasn't been stressed on, it hasn't been exposed really at all. And I want to do the rest of the evening with you and the implications of this story, because this weaves a tale that covers a lot of things that are in the news now, and go to the French story. Jonathan Marshall, in his newsletter Parapolitics, quoted two French newspapers regarding the Ali Aja affair at the time, investigating who shot the Pope. French author Alain Grand has revealed interesting information as the basis of their trial. Former SDECE, that's the French equivalent of our Central Intelligence Agency, former SDECE, now called the DGSE, the director of that is Alexander Demarench, Marenches. And David Emery sent me this material, some of the material on Marenches, some I had, but we put this together. Alexander Demarench was the head of the French intelligence until about a year ago. He and his personal assistant, Maurice Leon Bacot, were asked six questions by the Italian justice involving the shooting of the Pope. Morench, as head of the French CIA, and his six assistants refused on the grounds of national security to answer any of the questions. There was a French role in the Swiss the money that came from the United States to Switzerland and to Oral Salik and to the shooting of the Pope, the distribution of the money. In another article in the French magazine Revolution, it's out of Paris, February the 9th, 1985, Grand described in detail the ties between Ali Aja, the extreme right Grey Wolves, the Turkish National Action Party, and also the links of that party to writer Claire Sterling, a woman who's given many lies on the Bulgarian-Russian connections to shooting the Pope, and also that Oral Salik, this is the gentleman that received the money from E.F. Hutton and Merrill Lynch, met with Italian terrorist Stefano Della Calle in Miami, Florida, in April of 1981. And, of course, Della Calle worked with the P2, Licio Gelli, Francesco Pazienza, Otto Skorzeny in a strategy of tension and setting up death squads. And the head of the French intelligence and six agents refused to ask questions about their role with the shooting of the Pope. And Mr. Morinch is named in conjunction with that with the French intelligence. And in a magazine called In These Times that comes out twice a month, this is September 24th, 1986, there's an article about who Mr. Morinch is. And I bring this up at this time because of the possible links to Aja, the American banks, and to Ronald Reagan and the National Security Council. Mr. Morinch, Alexander Demarench, formerly head of the SDECA, now was from November 1970 to 1981, had that position. He used to be quiet and out of sight, but now he's promoting what he calls his geopolitical viewpoint in order to build the free world institutions because of the necessity of a global world war, a war against the Soviet Union. A total war is necessary. Marinch wants France to set up a National Security Council, and think of Germany and France literally merging their two armies just in the past month, and joining together with their neutron warheads, as well as other weapons. Marinch wants France to have a National Security Council like the United States to carry on the Third World War. He considers himself he's a member of the Knights of Malta. He considers himself a person who is a team player in the group that want this large world war. And Marinch, Alexander Marinch, is half American. His mother's American. His father was best friends with George Marshall during the war. He's a close friend of Alexander Haig. They're both Knights of Malta, knighted by the Vatican. Marinch takes credit for setting the course of President Reagan's foreign policy. The French intelligence set the course. The French CIA, SDECE, set the course for Reagan's foreign policy. I explained one day to Reagan the 8 strategic raw materials that are indispensable in war, as in peacetime. America controls only 4. The Russians have 8. We need this war, of course, against the Soviet Union. Marinch has visited Reagan in California. He said Reagan didn't know much about world strategy. He took out his maps. He said he's a good friend of Jonas Savimbi. That's from Angola, the one the vote will be coming soon to give the money to him or not to give it. And this article says the United States has the means to carry out a grand strategy. They have no experience or imagination or continuity because you are troubled by elections every 4 years. And Marinch says his philosophy is futile. He sees himself carrying out the tradition of noble families serving kings and monarchs. He helped advise the King of Spain, the late Shah of Iran, the Saudi Arabian families. That's Mr. Marinch in France. Now, with regards to the Ali Aja story, where Marinch wouldn't testify for the Italian authorities, nor would his 6 other personages, a gentleman involved in the shooting of the Pope and the disinformation about it that came from France was found murdered March the 12th, 1983. A while back, I might have mentioned him, but it's appropriate now to talk about this man. He was a Lieutenant Colonel Bernard Nutt, and he was gunned down in France. He was murdered. And the newspapers, I'm citing the San Francisco Chronicle, March the 12th, the newspapers said that there were press reports in France and Italy that Nutt was involved in the arrest of the Soviet airline official who had been accused of spying in Rome, later cleared of all of that, and that he was the source of information about the famous link of May 13th, 1981, of the attack against the Pope. Lieutenant Colonel Nutt of France was responsible for the information about Aja working for the KGB, and is thanks for setting out the disinformation and working with people like Michael Ledeen and Claire Sterling, is that he was killed from a distance. There was no powder or gun, no trace of gunpowder on his face. Fragmented bullets made it difficult to determine if it had been pot fired. Of course, they wondered if it was a suicide, but he was pulled aside the road and supposedly waiting for somebody and who had a loaded gun, and he was gunned down. And this was the gentleman who was giving the disinformation. And as I say, this Ali Aja, who was charged with shooting the Pope, got his money from Oral Salek, funded E.F. Hutton, Merrill Lynch at the time Reagan was just in office. And Mr. Marinch was the advisor and has been to Ronald Reagan foreign policy, oozing us on to World War III. And the way to do that would be to have the Bulgarian, Russian KGB shoot the Pope, kill the Pope, and even just shoot him. And it's had years of mileage. It's had all these years that there's still a chance that the Russians shot at the Pope, even though there never was a shred of evidence. Now, getting on to 3 or 4 articles that have to do with a man high up in public office, not holding public office, but the underbelly of the way our country is run. I want to share several articles with you about a man named Glenn Suham. Souham, who was murdered. And this is one of the few times that the newspapers covered the story that he was probably murdered because of what he did for the National Security Council. I cited last week one of those very rare articles about a couple that were bludgeoned in their home in Berkeley, and a doctor at the UC lab believed that there was a pattern of hitting and trying to kill civil rights activists who are kind to blacks or opposed the war in Vietnam. And the stories that came after Souham was murdered had the same tone to them. They didn't disguise the fact at all that working for the NSC is dangerous business. The first article on that comes from the Washington Times. They did a series that the other papers didn't carry. If you wonder why the papers that you see, the Monterey Herald, the San Francisco Chronicle, Los Angeles Times, whatever you read, didn't have this, so this should be new for you if you don't read the Washington Times, and not many people do. I advise that you do, even though Reverend Moon publishes it, because he keeps up with the espionage parts of these stories. Arnaud de Borchgrave worked with the disinformation of the shooting of the Pope with Michael Ledeen, and was part of that Jonathan Institute that met in 1979 that I talked about. But these articles come out from the Washington Times, and they're very important because they have a knack of writing for agents, and they spell things out so that you know. Like they'll say, two liberals are appointed to the Intelligence Committee, where you won't see that kind of coverage as the Monterey Herald or the San Francisco Examiner and so forth. Well, before I get into the murder of Glenn Souham, we could take a one-minute break and tell you that the second half of this program is a talk show. From that end of the first hour at 8 to 9, you can call in, make notes of things that I'm talking about, and call about those if you can think about it. I know it goes fast, but you must be hearing something that I'm saying. Sometimes I have material that's very important, and the calls are great, and I appreciate them, and they cover a wide range of subjects. But some of this stuff is material you're going to hear later, learn about, and it's important. Maybe the first time you hear it, it's a little strange to talk about. But the purpose of the talk show is anything you want to talk about. And so we'll be back together in another half hour. And then you can share what you've seen, read, heard during this past week or in the last couple of weeks or month or whatever.